What if you could separate your darkest impulses from your virtuous self? This is precisely what Dr. Jekyll attempts in Robert Louis Stevenson's masterpiece, written in just 6 days after a vivid nightmare. The tale of a respected physician who creates a potion to unleash his hidden self wasn't just popular in 1886 Victorian London, it fundamentally changed how we understand human nature. Within 6 years of publication, Jekyll and Hyde entered everyday language to describe anyone with a dual personality. The story's psychological insight proved so penetrating that even Sigmund Freud recognized in it a powerful metaphor for the divided self. What makes this tale endure through 120-plus film adaptations and countless cultural references is how it confronts us with an uncomfortable truth. The monster isn't someone else, it's another version of ourselves. Man is not truly one, but truly two, confesses Dr. Jekyll. His mistake wasn't creating evil, but giving physical form to what already existed within him. Jekyll's experiment reflects a Calvinistic view of human nature, that we contain both angelic and demonic impulses, drawn from Stevenson's Presbyterian Scottish upbringing. The story's psychological insight lies in how Hyde gradually strengthens while Jekyll weakens. Initially requiring the potion to transform, Jekyll eventually changes spontaneously, symbolizing how indulged vices grow more powerful over time. Jekyll had more than a father's interest, Hyde had more than a son's indifference, captures the asymmetrical relationship between our conscious and unconscious selves. Hyde appears physically smaller than Jekyll, yet more energetic, suggesting our civilized selves require constant effort to maintain, while primitive impulses remain vigorous. People instinctively recoil from Hyde despite struggling to identify any specific deformity, representing how evil often manifests not as obvious monstrosity, but as a subtle wrongness we sense before we can name it. The London of Stevenson's novella is obsessed with appearances. Mr. Utterson embodies Victorian respectability, austere with himself, drinking gin alone to mortify a taste for vintages. His philosophy, "I let my brother go to the devil in his own way," reveals the Victorian tolerance for vice as long as it remains discreet. Jekyll's experiment emerges from this suffocating atmosphere. As a respected doctor, he cannot publicly indulge his vices. The potion offers freedom. As Hyde, he pursues forbidden pleasures without risking his reputation. "The pleasures which I made haste to seek in my disguise were undignified," Jekyll writes, "but in the hands of Edward Hyde, they soon began to turn toward the monstrous." Stevenson never specifies Hyde's undignified pleasures. He insisted that the harm was in Jekyll because he was a hypocrite, not because he was fond of women. The true sin is maintaining a virtuous public face while secretly indulging darker impulses. Jekyll's tragedy stems from compartmentalizing his life rather than integrating his whole self. This Victorian obsession with appearances leads directly to his downfall. Stevenson transforms London into a character mirroring Jekyll and Hyde's duality. The novella opens with a mysterious door in a respectable street, establishing the theme of hidden passages within the urban landscape. Jekyll's handsome home contrasts with the sinister block housing his laboratory door. The front entrance opens to elegant houses where Jekyll entertains, while the back door leads to a dingy by-street, perfect for Hyde. This architectural division physically manifests Jekyll's psychological split. Hyde's Soho lodgings exist in some city in a nightmare, where fog still slept at midday. This fog-shrouded London creates atmospheric conditions for Hyde's activities, a physical manifestation of moral ambiguity. London's famous fogs, actually toxic smog from coal fires, serve as both literal setting and metaphor for obscured moral vision. The city's labyrinthine quality, hidden courtyards, fog-bound streets, mysterious doorways, suggest that beneath Victorian society's orderly surface lies a maze of dangerous possibilities. The urban setting implies civilization itself contains the potential for barbarism. Stevenson structures the novella as a mystery revealed through multiple perspectives. Instead of beginning with Jekyll's experiment, we first join lawyer Utterson investigating the connection between Jekyll and the mysterious Hyde. This creates suspense while allowing readers to experience the central mystery alongside the characters. The narrative unfolds through increasingly intimate viewpoints, from Utterson's external observations to Lanyon's witness of the transformation to Jekyll's confession. This progression mirrors our growing understanding of Jekyll's predicament as we penetrate layers of secrecy. Utterson serves as the perfect initial narrator, a cautious, rational lawyer approaching the mystery with skepticism. Through his eyes, we experience Hyde's uncanny quality that causes inexplicable disgust despite no specific deformity. Dr. Lanyon's narrative provides the crucial eyewitness account of Hyde transforming into Jekyll. As a scientist, his testimony carries weight, yet the experience so disturbs him that he dies shortly afterward. Jekyll's full statement finally reveals the complete truth, transforming our understanding of previous events. This delayed revelation makes Jekyll's moral culpability more powerful. We've witnessed Hyde's crimes before learning Jekyll's responsibility. Jekyll's experiment straddles legitimate science and forbidden transcendental medicine, embodying Victorian anxieties about scientific overreach and divine boundaries. His potion works due to an impurity in the original salt, an element he cannot reproduce when supplies run out. This limitation reveals Jekyll's fundamental misunderstanding. He triggers forces beyond his comprehension, arrogantly believing science can separate what nature and God united. The Victorian era debated evolution and atavism, theories suggesting humans might revert to primitive states. Hyde's troglodytic appearance and ape-like fury when murdering Sir Danvers Carew reflect fears that civilization merely veneers our animal nature. Jekyll's laboratory, formerly a dissecting room, connects to contemporary controversies around cadaver procurement for medical research, evoking notorious cases like the Burke and Hare murders. This historical context deepens Jekyll's transgression. Like those anatomists, he pursues knowledge through morally questionable means. Stevenson's tale endures because it confronts fundamental questions about human nature. Are we essentially good people, occasionally tempted by darkness, or fundamentally selfish creatures constrained only by social convention? Jekyll's fatal error is believing he can cleanly separate these aspects. Man is not truly one, but truly two, he declares, but the story suggests we are neither purely Jekyll nor purely Hyde, but an inseparable mixture. The potion doesn't create Hyde, it merely gives independent existence to what was already within Jekyll. The tragedy unfolds when Jekyll disowns responsibility for Hyde's actions, insisting it was Hyde, not Jekyll, who did this. Only after Hyde murders Sir Danvers does Jekyll recognize his culpability. I brought the life of that unhappy Henry Jekyll to an end. Modern psychology would view Jekyll's experiment as dissociation, the mind's attempt to wall off aspects it cannot integrate. Jekyll creates Hyde not merely to indulge forbidden pleasures, but to escape the accompanying guilt. This artificial separation proves unsustainable. As transformations become involuntary, Jekyll confronts the truth that Hyde is an essential part of his nature. The final tragedy comes when Jekyll can no longer maintain his preferred identity. Have you ever caught yourself saying, "That wasn't really me," after doing something regrettable? Perhaps the most terrifying aspect of Jekyll and Hyde is recognizing that our darkest impulses are integral parts of ourselves. Parts we must acknowledge for true self-mastery.